flying saucers are real.
They've seen the aliens buzzing our missile silos.
The UFO phenomenon, either we like it or not, is already very much part of our reality.
That caused a compass needle to spin and spin.
And that's where the whole seed for the idea of underground bases at Dulce was planted.
They had very large eyes, and you know, I found their stare extremely difficult to bear.
Hi, everyone. This is Martin Willis. Welcome to Podcast UFO for episode number 39 with Klaus Svahn. You'll listen in that interview later on after the news, and you will see why I really like the way the Swedes investigate and handle UFOs. And you'll also see why I will no longer swim in lakes anymore. And a couple of quick announcements. Hope you come to our website, which is podcastufo.com. We have a lot of articles on there, written mostly by Michael Lauk, who does the news coming up. And also we have a new forum on there that's getting pretty active. And please check that out. We'd love to have you on it. You can like us on Facebook, or you can follow us on Twitter. And there's a lot of news going on. Wouldn't you say so, Michael?
Sure is. It is a packed week.
Yeah, so let's roll into the news. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Good.
Good. All right, well, then here we go. The universe is older than previously believed. The estimate that our universe is 13.7 billion years old has been revised thanks to data from the Planck Cosmology Probe. It has created the most accurate, quote-unquote, baby picture of the universe to date. And using this, scientists announced Thursday, March 21st, that the universe appears to be 13.81 billion years old, give or take 50 million years. The baby picture was created using temperature variations imprinted into the universe when it was only 380,000 years old. You'll find a link to all this information on our show notes.
Yeah, this is great. This just came out this morning. We're recording the day before the podcast is released. And it just came out this morning. And from what I understand, there's going to be a lot more information forthcoming on this.
Yeah, it's quite possible once they really get into this that they can see fingerprints of other dimensions. And if that's the case, knowing how many other dimensions were created could kind of be a backdoor way to support string theory, superstring theory, other high-level physics views of the universe like that.
Pretty fascinating.
Voyager 1 is still in the solar system. NASA reported on March 20th that despite reports to the contrary, the majority opinion of Voyager team scientists is that the Voyager 1 craft has not yet left the solar system. News reports did state on Wednesday that a drop-off in cosmic rays indicated that Voyager 1 had left, but NASA is waiting for a specific change in the magnetic field readings to signal the craft's entry into interstellar space. Read NASA's official statement through the link in the show notes.
Now, that's amazing. I wonder if there's a border patrol out there.
We're about to find out.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that has been a theory that that's what UFOs do, is they keep us in.
I believe there's a theory of that. Now, I think that was it was like 35 years ago that thing was launched. It hasn't even left the solar system. That is pretty amazing, really.
Well, what's really amazing is that we still get data from it.
Yes.
Sri Lankan meteor allegedly contains fossilized algae. A second paper has been published by a group of scientists claiming that a meteor that impacted Sri Lanka last December contains fossilized algae. The work is, at best, highly controversial in the scientific community, especially since the initial paper was submitted mere weeks after the meteor struck Palaniwara, Sri Lanka. Listeners may remember reports of the event as several witnesses were burned by falling debris and or sickened by the fumes from the impact area. You can read a Daily Mail article through the link in our show notes.
Now, I'm wondering about this as far as, you know, they always talk about contamination of these things when they're testing them, because if this thing could be proven still, you know, what I'm imagining is that you can cut a meteor in half or something and look for fossils inside. That's what I imagine, so you can actually get away from any contamination issues.
True, but I guess, A, you have to be sure that, you know, every rock that you found in that area is part of that meteorite. I think that's one of the issues. Also, I do believe this is microscopic algae. Yeah. So, you know, it is a little bit more difficult. And I guess conceivably even just a speck of sand mixed in could skew everything.
Right. But, I mean, if they cut through it fresh and then analyze it that way. That's what I'm thinking, but I don't know enough about it. It'd be an amazing announcement if it was true.
Which is all the more reason that it needs to be handled correctly.
That's right.
March 25th is the Aztec UFO crash or hoax anniversary. Monday, March 25th will mark the 65th anniversary of the alleged UFO crash and recovery near Aztec, New Mexico. The account of the damaged saucer, which appeared to make an emergency landing in the desert, was first reported by Frank Scully in his 1950 book, Behind the Flying Saucers. Although the entire incident is mired in controversy, it was the focus of a recent book by Scott and Suzanne Ramsey, with a foreword, I believe, by Stanton Friedman. They were recently lecturing in the area and conducted a tour of the site they believe to be the crash or recovery site. There is a link to a Washington Examiner article about that tour and lecture in our show notes.
You know, you always hear about issues with UFOs and flying saucers. You know, there's a lot of crashes. When you listen to the show today, there was an issue with one in Sweden. And then we have, you know, Corona. We have Socorro. Something may have happened there. Maori Island. There was all kinds of things where there were some issues. I'm wondering if there's like a UFO AAA or something like that.
Well, one would hope, but the counter to this is kind of twofold. Some people posit that the very new high power experimental radar installations interfered with UFOs. Mm-hmm. Which I guess, you know, that's as possible as anything without knowing how they worked. And then, you know, Frank Frischino especially has argued that we were actively trying to take them down in his book, Shoot Them Down. And he talks about that in his Braxton County book as well, that, you know, we had not only did we have radar for the first time on jets, also for the first time about this time, that we had a lot of interesting new, very destructive weapons that might have caught some of these poor intergalactic, you know, anthropologists off guard. And maybe they just sucky drivers. Out of this World Conference podcasts. As we reported, last week's guest Stanton Friedman was one of the speakers at the Out of the World UFO Conference in Texas held last Friday. The one-day event was streamed over the internet by Inception Radio Network and the Jerry Pippin Show. Free MP3 downloads are now available. If you follow the link in our show notes to Jerry Pippin's page, you will find not only a single MP3 covering the entire event, but links to separate files for each presenter, which are in MP3 and Windows Media format.
Yeah, I'm just wondering something here, Michael. I noticed, you know, last week we talked about this. I did actually listen to the live streaming for a little while. I had some technical issues with my computer, but still. But anyway, you know, we talked about Jerry Pippin last week. You kind of endorsed him on our message board, and I'm starting to wonder if you infiltrated my podcast. Are you pimping Pippin?
I'll take the fifth. As you know, there's a tremendous amount of money in the field of UFOs.
That's right.
And the temptations are great, sir.
Yeah.
No, I'm just a fan of his show and have been for a few years. And, you know, and he has made this happen, which is also, I mean, more credit to him and the Inception Radio Network for offering this. If I'm pimping any podcast, it's mine.
Okay. All right. Well, hey, while we're on the subject, what is your podcast?
My podcast is Flying DVDs of Death, but we're in hiatus right now between seasons. It's very different from this one. It's about kung fu movies.
Well, that's okay. All right. So now that we cleared the air, we can move on here.
UFO sighting databases. The IT World website recently published an interesting article for all UFO researchers featuring the best freely accessible sightings databases on the internet. It is a short list, but the article is handled without ridicule and does connect readers with literally tens of thousands of sightings. You can check the link in our show notes.
That sounds really interesting. It sounds like a place that I'd like to check out a lot. Is everything, all the information right on that website?
Yeah, it's a very short article with links and descriptions of each database.
That's cool.
All right, and finally, hey, Martin, want to name a planet? The Uwingo Fund, which has been set up to support all manners of space exploration and science through grants, has set up a contest to name a planet. Currently, extrasolar planets have designations such as Alpha Centauri, capital B, small b, And in an effort to involve the public in space research, Uingo has started a contest to give Alpha Centauri, capital B, small b, a proper name. Each name nomination will cost $4.99, which goes to their grant fund, as does the 99-cent voting fee. There are prizes for getting 100, 1,000, and 10,000 votes, as well as for the highest vote getter. Some of my favorite names so far include Heinlein, after the influential science fiction author, and Arisia, which is the planet of the good aliens from the E.E. Doc Smith-Lindsman series of books, kind of a classic of the old pulp space opera era, and Saiya, the home of the Super Saiyans from the Dragon Ball comic books and cartoons, which I also nominated. So, Martin, any thoughts on naming a planet?
Yeah, actually, I have issue with this. You know, I think they should be allowed to name their own planet. I mean, can you imagine if, say, on planet Uwingu a million years ago, someone won a contest and they named our planet Fred or something like that? You know, I mean, we wouldn't be too happy if we had to change everything. Like, we'd have to become Fredlings, or we had Fred Quakes, or we had to save Mother Fred. You know, it just doesn't work. So, I mean, what gives us the right to name someone else's planet? I just totally disagree, and I'm going to fight this.
Well, I think we have the right because we're Americans.
Oh, okay. You made the point.
End of story.
Yep, that's it. Slam dunk. All right, hey, Michael, is that it for the news?
That is it for the news. And in defense of Uwingo, I do believe that Alpha Centauri, capital B, small b, is kind of a super hot, fiery death trap of a planet that nothing is believed to live on.
Well, you know, it's a slippery slope. I mean, this could be just the beginning.
It is a slippery slope.
Yeah. Well, anyway, hey, thanks for the news this week, Michael, and we'll see you next week.
I will see you next week, my fellow Fredling.
Yes. I'm with Klaus Svahn in Sweden. How are you, Klaus?
I'm very well. Thanks, Martin. And the weather is nice and the snow is still here.
It is still there. Wow. Do you have regular winters, like, you know, the typical winter through April there?
Yeah, the winter starts in December with snow in the middle of December. And the end of it will be probably late March here, down here in Stockholm, but in the further north, it will still be winter in April.
Thanks so much for joining us. I looked at your website online, and by the way, what a great domain name, ufo.se.
Yeah, that's good.
I love that. Yes. Now, you take UFOs fairly serious. We're going to be talking about ghost rockets later on, but first of all, I want to talk about you, how you got involved, and also how your country takes UFOs compared to America. I want to talk about that. You seem to take it more seriously. There's a lot of fringe people that we call over here. But anyway, let's start by you telling the listener audience how you got involved in the UFOs.
Well, my interest in UFOs started as a teenager and as an avid amateur astronomer back in the early 1970s. Since I'm born 1958, I was 12, maybe 13, when I started reading books about UFOs and collect news clippings. But very soon I realized that I wanted to investigate what people really saw. So as a means to do this, I founded a local UFO organization. Then I was 16 in 1974. And that group, it was only guys, not the female, as far as you can see. It was connected to UFO Sweden, which was founded a couple of years earlier. So I've been into UFO Sweden since the very beginning. But I think my first really big boast was when I went out as 16 years old, meeting the eyewitnesses, interviewing them, and starting to realize that most of the observations could be explained in mundane terms, that people often were poor observers and that there were very little support for an ET conclusion. Instead, I saw an unknown phenomenon, or rather unknown phenomena, that in some very interesting cases defied my attempts to find an explanation. So I saw the enigma quite early, and also the problems which the UFO enigma has. So I'm still on that road, I think.
Wow, 16 is very young. Are there anyone involved in the group at all that young these days?
We are having some new young people coming in, a couple of new ones every year. Not 16, but maybe 19, 20. Mm-hmm. And the UFO, the work with UFOs has changed so much during the years, from the 70s up until now. I mean, at that time, it was very easy to form an organization, to form a UFO group, and people came. People attended meetings and wanted to meet with each other. Today, most of the meetings are held on the internet, on mm-hmm. Facebook or whatever. So I'm a little sorry to say that it's much more problematic today to have people to come to attend meetings.
Right. In your local group, how many attend now on a regular basis?
Well, we have board meetings. We had a board meeting yesterday, and we were 15 people. That's nearly the full board. And if we have a meeting for the public, maybe 70, 80 persons will attend that meeting. Mm-hmm. We do not have that many meetings within UFO Sweden, except two times a year. We have a field investigation training course every autumn, and it's 40 people attending that every year. And we have an annual meeting now in May, when we have an exhibition and lectures and things like that. And that's mainly for the public. So mm-hmm. we go to a different city every year. Maybe 80, 100 people will come and listen, and maybe a couple of hundred will see the exhibition.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, what is the activity like in general in Sweden these days?
We get around one report every day to our report center. It's been around one report every day since many, many years back. And most of them are, of course, just specks of lights in the sky and quite easily explained. If you look at the real puzzling ones, they are maybe a handful every year. Mm-hmm. So the good ones are hard to find.
Yes. I was looking through your advice for people investigating, and I really thought there was some very balanced points here. One of them, number 9, is always be prepared to give up your favorite ideas when new facts emerge. What great advice that is. A lot of people really want to hang on to the idea of something.
We really try to do that. Yeah, that's very, very important. We realized the problems with getting too much involved in UFOs, because many ufologists are they are avid readers of UFO books and readers on the internet and looking maybe on YouTube clips. But I try to read scientific books as much as I can. I'm trained in natural sciences, and I've written a couple of books about unusual natural phenomena, and I have an expertise in astronomy, which I've been into since I was a very, very small guy. So I think knowing those kind of facts are more important than dwelling into speculations about the origin of UFOs, because if you don't know the basics, you cannot make the proper identifications. And the cases that are still left will be so much more valuable if you have the knowledge to get rid of the misinterpretations.
Your library is very nice. I saw the picture online. It looks like you have a vast amount of research books there.
Yes, I have a small library myself, 8,000 books at my house. But the big one, the large library, is in Norrköping at the Archives for UFO Research, which is a part of UFO Sweden. We have 24,000 books there, and nice. 1,500 meters of bookshelves. So it's hundreds and thousands of it's films, and it's everything, you know, everything you would like to know about UFOs. And we have 10 persons working there every day.
Wow. Wow, and, that's amazing.
Yes, material coming in all the time.
If you had to compare Sweden to the United States, as far as you know, how does society view UFOs compared to America?
I think there is quite many differences, mainly because of UFO Sweden has been around so many years, and we have never said that we have the answer to UFOs, but that we are investigators of them. So the belief in UFOs as extraterrestrial visitations here on Earth are not widespread as in the United States. But a poll made in the early 1990s showed that 24% of the Swedish populations believed at that time that we had visitations from extraterrestrials. That number is at least twice as high in the United States. But even though every fourth Swede wanted to believe.
Before we get into the subject of ghost rockets, what is the last book that you have written, or a book that you have written in regards to UFOs?
I was invited a couple of years ago to write a book together with some other very prominent UFO researchers. Michael Swartz and Robert Powell are the editors of UFOs and Government, and that was published in the United States last year. And we were, eight or nine ufologists from around the world, writing about our specialities. And I wrote the chapter about the ghost rockets and another chapter about the Swedish military and their UFO investigations.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about your involvement in your articles on the ghost rockets. This was just after World War II, wasn't it?
That's right. It was in 1946, and the war was only half a year back, really, when the first observation started. In the very early 1946, and the first sightings were mostly of meteors, probably. There were lights in the sky, and but in May, I think it was May 28th, it was the first headline with the word ghost rocket mentioned in the Swedish newspaper. And that brought back fears of the German V-bombs from the World War II, of course. People saw rocket-like craft in the air, and they remembered when some of those rockets crashed on Swedish soil in 1944 and 1945.
Were any of them ever explained? You said some of them were meteors.
Yeah, but after a while, there became more and more of daylight sightings. And in July the 6th, the military founded a ghost rocket committee. And this committee was working only with those sightings for half a year. And it was a very, very good group of people. Most of them were trained from the military, but also experts on astronomy and meteorology and other sciences, trying to explain all those observations, because they were pouring in June and July and in August. The military investigated nearly 1,000 reports of UFOs in the air over Sweden, about those ghost rockets. They even chased them with aircraft.
Wow. Like, this is just post what they called the Foo Fighters.
Yes, that's right. It's really the next step. The ghost rockets and the Foo Fighters are, of course, UFO phenomena. But the Foo Fighters were mainly lights, balls of lights, and the ghost rockets were at least, I think, 150 cases were seen in daylight of rocket light craft with small wings or no wings at all, and crashing into Swedish lakes. And that were really the big puzzle, because every single observation where an object crashed did crash into a lake. Not every, not a single one on land.
Wow, Wow, that's amazing. Now, have you ever been able to find, have they ever released any documents of any of this?
Yes, in 1986, myself and Anders Liljegren at the Archives for UFO Research, we traced down the military files at the War Archives here in Stockholm. And there are a couple of thousand pages of interviews and investigations that the military stamped secret at that time. But 40 years later, we were able to get them unclassified.
Was there really interesting facts that you discovered?
What we did at that time was to start interviewing every single person we really found interesting, that which name we found in the documents. Mm. So we did a lot of interviews with both military investigators and the eyewitness still alive in 1986. We also, of course, read all of the documents and made statistics and tried to find explanations. And what I can say about the Ghost Rockets are that this is still, to me, the biggest puzzle when it comes to UFOs, because there were so many very good observers, so many hours of investigations, and still no real answer what was flying over Sweden or crashing into lakes. And the military looked for them. They tried to find them in those lakes.
They did. I was going to ask that question. So they actually dove in the lakes and looked for them. Wow.
Yeah, but they never found anything. They could see it was traces of something falling down, hitting the floor of the lake, and also stones flying up from the bottom of the lake to the shore, and explosions, really. People saw large columns of waters splashing into the air when those things crashed down.
Wow. And that's kind of ironic that the Russian meteor recently landed in a lake as well.
Yeah, it didn't. It didn't land in a lake. That picture you have seen from the lake with the hole in the ice, it's not from the meteor. I could tell that from the very beginning. At first I saw it. I commented on this in Swedish radio. It couldn't be from the meteor, because the meteor crashed through ice. It splitters. The ice is completely destroyed. It never caused a hole that is as round as this one. And so this is something else. Probably natural gas coming from beneath, eating the ice from underneath. It's very common.
Oh, okay. Well, that's funny. Because when I first read about it, you know, many times they were saying, there were many articles saying that that was where the meteor crashed. So, yeah, all faults, huh? Wow, that's interesting. Sweden itself has had reports, like I mentioned earlier, all the way back to 1808, and that was a mass sighting, wasn't it?
Yes, it was, but the reports are, of course, going way more back than 1808. That was one of the first published in newspapers.
Oh, I see. Mm-hmm.
Several persons saw that one, but I'm also one of maybe 25 persons working together on the internet, tracing UFO sightings back to the 1600s, 1700s. So we are going through documents all the time, reading old books and trying to find those observations. There are a lot of them. There are hundreds and hundreds of very, very strange sightings of crafts and lights in the sky, defying explanations at that time and even today, I should say.
That sounds like that would be great information to compile into a book. Have you ever thought of writing one on that?
One of the guys in this group has written a book about it, and I think we are a couple of others that will do in the future. There are those observations are not very well known to the public, because they are in very obscure books and in Latin, in the Greek, and languages that are not very easy to read for us. Mm-hmm. Yes, I think there will be many more books written about this, and I will include some of the observations in upcoming books I will write as well.
Would you say that there are some compelling cases, besides the ghost rockets that we mentioned earlier, what would you consider the most compelling case that you've been involved in?
Yes, there are quite a few, and I followed one man for 8 years. He reported that he saw a landing in 1946 the year of the ghost rockets, but it was never published in 1946. It took him many, many years in the early 70s before he told anyone. And his story was that he was out going at nighttime in the woods outside the city in the southwest of Sweden and seeing a light from a couple of hundred meters within the woods. So when he went there, he saw a classic flying saucer, really, standing in a clearing. A couple of persons working around it, looking much like you and me, with the coveralls, repairing something on this craft. And from the top of it, it was a globe of light streaming down, like some sort of... should I say, globe hitting the ground, splashing electricity from the grass. And he was stopped by some sort of sentinel standing outside this globe of light. And so he went around and trying to get in another way. And then the craft started to ascend and flew away. And later on, he found things. He found a couple of things in this clearing that the guys from the craft had thrown away. A staff of crystal and some mugs with liquid and also a ring, a golden ring. And at this site today, there is a monument that this man erected. So it's a public place where many people go and for a stroll and take a look and read at the plaque and see. And this is still an unknown observation, but I suspect that it didn't really happen in that way that he told me. I have some doubts about it, but it's very, very well known in Sweden and even published in English.
Have you been able to observe the so-called evidence?
Yes, eventually I did. And but I was never allowed to make any analysis myself. And now he's dead, and his daughter probably has them. And she's not very interested in helping out, trying to find an answer.
Has anyone looked at the pieces scientifically?
Well, according to the witness, he said he sent one of them to Switzerland and had it analyzed, and that it was made of some quartz crystal and some other to Earth unknown material. But he never showed me that analysis, even though I knew him for 8 years and we spent so many hours together. He would never allow me to see the analysis.
Mm. That's a little suspect then, huh?
Very much so. And I think I can find explanations for his story, but it's very well known, and you can read about it in UFO books. And I've written a book about it in 320 pages just about this case, so it's a very complex case.
Wow. In America, we have a lot of purported abductions. Worldwide, you don't hear about them so much. What are the abduction accounts like in Sweden?
Very, very, very few. It's not one a year. It's maybe one report every 10 years or something like that. I've investigated a couple of them, and we are very, very doubtful about them. But we do have, of course, observations of human-like figures, not necessarily abducting people, but we do have that kind of reports. And I've investigated one quite interesting one with two witnesses. They were asleep at their house in the south of Sweden. And the girl, the wife in this case, told me that she woke up in the middle of the night. The room was alight. It was some sort of light coming from somewhere. And she was lying in a fetus position with her face facing down to the bed, hovering 5 centimeters over the bed, being dragged backwards towards a light behind her. And she was She was scared, of course. She saw her husband sleeping, sound asleep beside her. So she tried to shout and waken him up, but she couldn't make any noise at all. But she grabbed him at his arm. And he tells me that he wakes up because of feeling this grab. Seeing his wife being floated from the bed towards three alien creatures, really the British Streber ones with bald heads and large eyes and small nostrils and slits to mouths. And they were standing behind her. And she was slowly going in that direction. And the light was coming from those three creatures. So he tried to kick them. So he kicked at them. And at that time, the light went out. The creatures were gone. And his wife was stand floating at the bedside. So she slammed into the floor. Oh. And went up into the bed again. And the only thing they said to each other was that, what was that? And they fell asleep again. And the next morning, they discussed it. So I don't know. I spent many, many hours together with those two people. And they tell the same story from different positions. But, of course, she never saw the aliens, if I call them that, because she had her back towards them, that he could see them.
Wow, that's an interesting account. Generally speaking, in Sweden, would an unexplained UFO tend to have a extraterrestrial hypothesis?
Well, when UFO Sweden started in 1970, it was very much pro-ET organization, and the only aim was really to prove to the public that they were here. In 1980, it was split, and one part of the organizations went to a more scientific-oriented way to investigate. The other one, well, still headed on along the ET track. And the public, I think, has been much more influenced by us, the more scientific-oriented UFO Sweden, since the other part still passed away a couple of years, 10 years ago, something like that, into oblivion. Mm-hmm. So the Swedish media very, very seldom writes about UFOs as ETs. They write about UFOs as an unidentified flying object. Seeing this as a strange phenomenon, really.
Mm-hmm. Now, you yourself had some type of sighting. Can you discuss that, please?
Yes, I mean, I'm never out looking for UFOs, but I'm out quite a lot looking at stars and using a telescope or whatever, since I'm still an amateur astronomer. But it was November the 5th, 1995, as me and my wife were heading back to Stockholm by car from north of Stockholm here. And I was driving. My wife was sitting to the right of me. And just maybe 600-700 meters from our house, there is a bus stop. And two men were standing there. It was 1 o'clock in the morning. One of them were pointing at something, and the other one was looking at that direction. So I asked my wife if she could lean forward and see if she could see anything. Oh, it's only stars, she said. It's a beautiful night, and it's crystal clear, but I can only see stars. So we went home, because just to park our car and go back into our house. But before we did that, we stopped in the garden for a couple of minutes, looking in the direction where those men were looking. And it was a fantastic night. It was crystal clear, really. And suddenly, out of the darkness, at an angle of maybe 35, 40 degrees from the horizon, three illuminated crosses came flying side by side, really. They were very, very easy to see. Both me and my wife saw them immediately. And my first thought was this must be birds illuminated by the streetlights, which I have seen so many times watching for stars. But those mm-hmm. birds, they were not flapping their wings. They were stiff, as carved out of something. And they flew over us. They didn't make any motion at all in between each other or flapping their wings or whatever. They were just rigid. I ran around the corner and I could see them flying over our neighbor's house and vanishing at the horizon. And after that, of course, we went inside. We never talked to each other. Since I'm chairman of UFO Sweden, I knew we shouldn't talk about this. We sat in two different rooms in the middle of the night, filled out each of us a form, reported this, and made drawings. And after that, we compared our sightings.
Yes, that is always a very good idea to do that separately, because you can certainly take on each other's opinions. Do you think that science will ever take ufology serious?
It depends on what you mean with science. Some parts of science are taking it seriously. I mean, we have scientists using our archives, and we work together with scientists trying to find explanations for different observations. But science as a whole, I mean, it's a vast question, because then you have both natural sciences and social sciences and everything. I'm not sure, because I'm not sure if this topic could be investigated by just one part of science. Mm-hmm. This is a very complex thing. You need to know so much about psychology, so much about physics, so much about meteorology, so much about astronomy, and other topics, to be able to make a proper investigation. And as it is now, parts of science are looking into this. I mean, people are investigating ball lightnings. Physicists are. Mm-hmm. And ball lightning may be a part of the answer to UFOs. So, yes, I think part of science will do that, and are doing this right now.
Is there a ridicule factor?
Not really. I'm interviewed by Swedish media 5 times a month, something like that. Mm-hmm. Maybe one time in 35 years I've been ridiculed.
Wow, that's great. A lot of people seem to hold back here in the States because of that.
Yes, I know that. People are holding back in many other countries. But I think if you are having an approach that we do have the answer, ET, they are here, I think you are much easier to make mock of. But if you say that we are looking for the answer, we are using scientific methods trying to find the answer, we know that there is unknown observations, there is phenomena that we cannot find an explanation to at this point of time, then what is it left to make fun of?
Right. So getting back to your website, ufo.sc, that does have an English translation button. Can you explain what the listener may find on your website?
Right now, you can find the most recent observations coming into our report center. And you can also find articles that have been published in our magazines. We have several magazines, but one of them is a glossy magazine called UFO Aktuellt, UFO News. You can find that stuff, and you can find a blog from me and a blog from my fellow investigator at the Archives for UFO Research, Håkan Blomqvist, where we write about UFOs. I've been writing a blog since 2005 every single day. So
wow, every day.
Yeah, every day. It's not only about UFOs, but I do quite a lot of UFO stuff every day, so that you can read about that as well. It's in Swedish, but you can translate. It's a translate button at the corner of the site. But we are building a new site. This is a very old one. We started in 1996, this UFO.se. But we are building a new one, and that will incorporate a massive site within the site about misidentifications, about what you can mistake the heavens. You will see pictures and films and read more about, in English, I would say as well, more about what you can see and misinterpret for UFOs.
When do you expect that to be launched?
I hope it will be launched after this summer. And right now we are also building a new site at the archives, afu.se, Archives for UFO Research.se. That is completely in English. It's there already, but we are building a new site as well. And I think after this summer, both of them will be up and running and will be very, very much used by people all around the world.
Wow, that's great. Well, thanks so much. You've been absolutely wonderful, Klaus.
Yeah, thanks you. Thank you very much, Martin, for calling me. Nice talking to you.
That's it for our show today. Thank you for listening. Klaus will be back at a later time, maybe next year or 6 months from now or something like that. I thought it was a great interview with him. Don't forget to check out our forum, and it's easy to join. We hope you join in the conversation there. And if you listen to us on iTunes, please leave us a review there. Thanks a lot, and we'll catch you next week. Remember to keep your eyes to the sky.
Don't.